Now, notice what this first one did. He says, I bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. Now, that man's a liar or a fool. I don't know which one he is, but he's one or the other. Can you imagine a man buying property, and this man didn't even go look at it before? I never knew a man to get rich and at the same time get closer to God. I don't know why that's true, but I've lost quite a few members that got rich down through the years. I made the statement some time ago that I never knew a wealthy church that has a gospel ministry. I know a certain man that is making, I suppose he makes some days $500 a day. May I say to you, he at one time was very active for the Lord, but he's sure not today. This man says, I bought some property, and I got to go take a look at it. And I think he's either a liar or a fool. And then notice the second one. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee have me excused. Now the other man let possessions keep him away. This man let business, commerce, keep him away. And again, I have to say that he's a liar or a fool. You never look a gift horse in the mouth is an ancient aphorism, but there's also another one that's called caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. And you don't plow at night to begin with. This man says, I got to go try out the oxen. Well, it's night. And that day they didn't have a flashlight. They didn't have a searchlight. And he says, I must take care of my business, and I hear that today. I must make a living. Well, my friend, one day you're going to have to die, and the thing is that you're going to find out that that day business will go on as usual without you. I had a member of my church that he was a doctor. My, he had his little clinic filled with sick people Sunday morning. Looked like every Sunday morning that clinic would fill up. I don't know why it did, but it sure did. But when his alma mater played football in Saskatchewan or Timbuktu, he managed to go there, and I guess a lot of people just didn't get sick at that time. They learned that when his alma mater played football, it just didn't pay to get sick at all. Then we have another one here. Another one said, verse 20, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. You know, in Israel, there was a law that a man was excused from going to war when he had taken a new wife. And we always find at wartime there's increase in marriages and the birth of children. I'm not drawing any inference from that and just saying that happens to be a fact. But this man, I think, had the weakest excuse of all. Why didn't he just bring her and come on to the dinner? You'd get a good dinner. Natural affection is what our Lord's talking about. These are the three things that are keeping more people from God than anything else. Possessions, business, and natural affection. How many today are being kept away because of a father or a mother that is not interested in the things of God? Somebody says, well, you know, Brother McGee, that I have only one Sunday with my family, and I want to spend it with them. Believe me, that keeps a lot of people from coming. Now, all these were excuses, and you can classify every excuse under one of these heads. I do not believe that I've ever heard a legitimate excuse. Men make excuses because the real reason was they did not want to come. What this first man should have said, excuse me from looking at the land. I can't do it today. I've got to go to church. The second man should have said, I can't look at these oxen. I've got a dinner engagement. And the third one said, wife, come on. I've got a wonderful invitation. I want you to share in it. And by the way, you've got an invitation, friend. I forgot to tell you about it, but I better tell you about it now. And that invitation's an engraved invitation. It's written in the blood of Christ, and it's to come to the great table of salvation. And by the way, if you reject God's invitation, he has to reject you. Listen to verse 24. For I say unto you that none of these men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. That's a severe thing, is it not? Now we have here again, verse 25, and there went great multitudes with him. I've mentioned that before. And he turned and said unto them, if any man come to me and hate not his father. In other words, it's to put him first. All terms which define the emotions or affections are always comparative. And the believer's devotedness to Christ should be such that it looked like everything else would be hate. This is what he's saying here. Then he tells about the tower, verse 28. For which of you intending to build a tower sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it, lest happily after he hath laid the foundation is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. May I say to you, you ought to make a decision for Christ, but you ought to think it over, friends. Now you have the parable of the king who's getting ready to go to war. Or what king, going to make war against another king, sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he be able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000? Or else while the other is yet a great way off, he sendeth an embassage and desireth conditions of peace. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Now you can be saved by just accepting Christ, but my friend, you will never follow him and you will never serve him until you are willing to make a sacrifice. That's the thing that he's saying here. There's a difference in being a disciple and being a believer. A believer should be a disciple. But unfortunately, they all are not.